Family, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The AARP, one of the nation's most influential lobbying groups, had a humble beginning. It dates back to 1947 and a retired California teacher named Ethel Percy Andrus. Andrus was upset seeing many former colleagues struggling with poverty and illness upon retirement, so she came up with an idea: form a group of retirees pooling their resources, and collectively they could afford health coverage. It was called the National Retired Teachers Association, and it worked. The group soon expanded, offering more insurance products to a wider audience. Just 10 years from its founding, it became the American Association of Retired Persons. Over the years, the AARP continued to broaden its membership and its mission, including involvement in politics. And that's where our guest today says the organization has landed in hot water. We're talking this hour with Frederick Lynch, an author and professor at Claremont McKenna College in California. His new book looks at this political role of the AARP, also its Herculean attempts to attract aging baby boomers as members, and its struggles with an ever-expanding mission. The book is called One Nation Under AARP, and Professor Lynch joins us now. Let's hear from you, too, this hour. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Lynch, thanks for getting up early out there in California and joining us.
Good to be with you, Laura, by the dawn's early light.
Well, what drew you to this subject? You say that, you know, not too many people have taken the time to write a whole book about AARP.
No, I started out in about 2000 doing some preliminary research on what aging baby boomers are going to be like. We were turning 50 then, and I was wondering, well, are we going to become a political force? Will we become the sleeping giant of age power? Because we've been pretty unique through our life history. So I started doing a lot of research in D.C. and going to all the think tanks, and I kept winding up at AARP. Because AARP had almost all the data there was on aging baby boomers. And, of course, we were going to be their next clientele because AARP is for people 50-plus. So they were researching us, finding out our attitudes, finding out what made us tick, what we wanted, and so forth, in order to attract as many of us as possible into their organization. And so there's some very bright minds there. I was really impressed with the caliber of the people there. And they, just about the time I was starting this, they started holding their Life at 50-plus conferences, which is sort of, I call it in the book, their traveling circus. And it's a big exhibition featuring guest speakers and a lot of Hollywood people and showbiz types. And they get about 27,000 people at this thing. So for me, being a sociologist and kind of an anthropologist who loves to do field research, it was a very interesting way to get to know AARP and watch them in action as they tried to attract 78 million aging baby boomers.
So you kind of had to shift gears there, as a researcher sometimes does when he or she discovers, oh, maybe this is the story that needs to be told.
Well, it really is a dual-focus book. It's looking at who are the aging baby boomers, particularly the older boomers, those people who were born roughly 1945 to 55. Because there's no question we are going to get old. We don't want to think that way, but we're getting old. And again, you've had almost a perfect storm come up, which I didn't foresee at all. When I started this out, I thought, gee, what if there's a stock market crash because boomers increasingly are relying upon their independent retirement account? And what if there's a decline in the housing market? Nobody saw that in the early 2000s. You know, what if there's a great recession? And, suddenly that's where we are with this sort of perfect storm gathering of the largest aging generation in history in lousy economic times. And the other thing, of course, that nobody saw coming, indeed, when I finished up the book, nobody saw it coming, and that is that Social Security and Medicare might be on the chopping block in the 2012 elections.
Well, and you talk in the book a lot about how AARP has gotten involved in these political issues, sometimes at its peril. Talking about the baby boomers, though, you know, and pardon the analogy, you say that some of the middle-aged baby boomers that AARP is trying to court have their own identity crises, and you say AARP itself is having an identity crisis. I was surprised by that, an identity crisis at such a big, successful organization. What do you mean, Professor Lynch?
Well, again, it's an American way of dealing with life, isn't it? We have our midlife crisis, our elder crisis, and so forth and so on. Yeah, the baby boomers, again, have always been a very individualistic, let me do it my way, very big on personal responsibility, fairly optimistic. And again, I think the older boomers, those of us born 45 to 55, we share a common culture, which is rooted in television and rock and roll. You know, there's a big nostalgia industry. And again, we have, and this is what AARP discovered in their research, we have kind of a general optimistic can-do individual orientation. I can surmount any barriers. But when you get into your 50s and 60s, there are certain barriers, you know, biological things start to happen. You start getting these funny little tests back from the doctor saying your cholesterol is going up and things like that. And, you know, you've been jogging all your life, but your knee is starting to go out. And so suddenly the idea that, you know, you can overcome everything. And, of course, now with the recession, people getting laid off, losing their jobs, losing their health insurance. So I think intimations of mortality start to occur to baby boomers. So that's kind of interesting to deal with. And then AARP, again, is having a number of issues. They've, again, tried to expand their organization. And really, with Bill Novelli, who was a really interesting former Madison Avenue executive, they hired him as their CEO in 2001. And he was very ambitious and really remade the organization, got rid of the old magazine. Some of your listeners may remember Modern Maturity, this magazine that sat on our parents' coffee table, and no boomer wanted to be caught dead or alive with that. And so they renamed the magazine. For a while, they called it My Generation, but then they went back to just AARP. They've also, by the way, dropped the full title of the organization, American Association of Retired Persons, because half of their members are still actively working. So they, and again, they put up a web page. They're all set for people to tweet and Facebook and all that stuff. They've gotten very hip, very high tech. And, again, remade the organization to attract the activist older baby boomers. And, again, they're these big mega conferences they have. Their traveling circus always has rock groups. It's very interesting. You have, you know, kids in their 30s and 40s playing the songs of the 50s and the 60s, and they'll have some of the old classics, you know, the Smothers Brothers, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. They had Chicago a couple of years ago.
Well, Professor Lynch, if I could just ask you about this makeover that Bill Novelli did when he came in 2001, the wizard of AARP, you call him. You know, and you mentioned the decision to change the name from American Association of Retired Persons just to AARP. And I remember when that happened. And you said the thinking behind it was that so many of the members were still working. But I got to say, to an outsider, it just seems odd. I mean, we all know what it stands for, so why pretend?
I think it's still the logo in the advertising lingo that AARP is such a well-known brand that they just decided to keep, and they don't like to be called ARP. That sounds like a dog barking, so if you're, politically correct around AARP, it's AARP. And but again, Novelli was very ambitious, and the organization's revenues went way up, and but his agenda really set off some tensions within the organization, which I think a lot of people don't quite understand. One of the raps on AARP is they're just mainly an insurance company, and they really don't care about seniors. All they care about is making money, and that really isn't true. I didn't find that. It is a dual-function organization, and you did some really good history at the beginning by talking about Ethel Percy Handris. When she set up the forerunner of AARP, which was the National Teachers Retirement Association, we didn't have Medicare. A lot of your listeners may not remember, there was a time in America when we didn't have Social Security and Medicare. And so her goal was to get senior citizens some sort of affordable health insurance because we didn't have Medicare. After Medicare went through, that's still a basic mission and function of the organization, is provide low-cost Medicare supplements, health insurance, auto insurance, again, to senior citizens, that there is power in numbers, and they can borrow a bargain with some of these big insurance companies and other groups to get seniors discounted rates. So
what is the mission at AARP today? You said Bill Novelli expanded that mission to what? And I'm getting a hint from you in some of your writings that maybe he expanded it too much. But go ahead, Professor Lynch. What is the mission of AARP today, then, from that original mission set out by that retired
teacher? It's a dual-focus organization. So on the one hand, it does have a commercial side to it, where, again, they sell products and services, often at very good prices. The other side, though, and here's where the tension comes in, there's the consumer AARP, and they're very interested in their consumer brand in order to maximize their services to senior citizens. The other side of AARP is the political and policy advocacy part of the organization, which Bill Novelli said that's our warrior brand. That, you know, we go to battle for senior citizens in Congress. It's a lobbying organization. So what drives a lot of its critics nuts is it's a self-funding lobbying organization, which is really unique. They, again, partner with insurance companies and other companies to sell senior citizen services, and they get royalties off that. And so they've gotten, you know, a lot of money doing that, and they pour it back into the AARP Foundation, which does charitable work, but also their political advocacy.
That's a funny amalgam of sort of for-profit and non-profit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Which gives it, again, there's sort of a tension within the organization between what they call the consumer brand and the political action brand, the warrior brand. The people on the services side don't want any controversy. Keep it cool. They want to be the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Right.
They want
sell
trust.
Products and right.
And if you get into controversial politics, that can undermine trust. On the other hand, the political side of the organization, the policy advocates, are saying we're supposed to be the advocates for senior citizens. So there is this tension that goes back and forth. You know, keep it cool, keep it calm. We don't want any controversy in order to sell our products to the maximum number of people. And then there's the political side says that, you know, Ethel Percy Andrus was to, you know, said that we should be, you know, lobbying Congress and making aging, successful aging, happy aging a priority.
Okay, and we will talk more after a short break about some of those political forays. Stay with us.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the NEEF Network organizations, partnering with New Hampshire colleges and universities in November to bring you I'm Going to College Month, nhcollegeclub.org. From White Mountain Oil and Propane in North Conway, providing the sales and service of home appliances for the kitchen and laundry room by Maytag and Amana, whitemountainoil.com. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouth-hitchcock.org. More on the history and political clout of the AARP on the exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, holding Wall Street accountable for the 2008 mortgage crisis. New Hampshire weather for today, turning partly sunny and breezy, highs 50 to 55. This is NHPR.
The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with the author of a new book called One Nation Under AARP, The Fight Over Medicare, Social Security, and America's Future. The author is Frederick Lynch. He's a government professor at Claremont McKenna College in California. And let's bring you into our conversation now. If you're in that age category that AARP covers of 50 plus, are you a member? Why or why not? And what do you make of AARP's lobbying activity on issues like Medicare? What role do you think AARP should play in these debates that we're having over entitlement programs like Medicare or Social Security? Our number for you to join us with your questions and comments is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email, too, if you like. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Lynch, just before the break, we were starting to get into AARP's political activity. You talked about the tension between the political side and the consumer side of the organization. When did AARP first get political and why?
Well, again, they've always been active in terms of defending Social Security and Medicare, and I think in terms of recent history, they, and this was under Bill Novelli, again, who came in as CEO in 2001, they were very, very instrumental in getting Medicare prescription drug coverage, the Medicare Modernization Act, in 2003. Now, they got some criticism for that because Medicare Part D, the Medicare prescription part, is covered by private insurance companies. And there were a lot of people, particularly on the left, who said we should have gone for broke and had that part of, you know, a government function the way regular Medicare is. But Novelli had to defend his actions. This was a major rift with the liberal establishment. He said, look, we got what we could. If George Bush was reelected in 2004, which he was, we wouldn't have gotten anything. So they settled for half a loaf. And ever since then, they've been trying to, you know, get better coverage, closing the donut hole, which is a gap in the Medicare coverage. They also, and this is where they really showed their clout, they are, by the way, the fourth highest spending lobbying group in D.C.
Wow.
They have a lot of money and they use it. And probably their biggest victory was in shooting down in pieces George W. Bush's efforts to establish private Social Security accounts. They were the sort of the leading organization that went against that, and just it never even got into Congress. Their most recent political effort, which got them into, again, a lot of hot water, they backed the Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare. And Nancy Pelosi said that SEIU, the Employers Union, and AARP were the two organizations that really spearheaded the drive for that act. And they lost about 400,000 to a million members at least.
Wow, wait a second. 400,000 to a million members dropped out of AARP just because of that?
Well, again, a lot of seniors, and this leads to a kind of identity crisis that I wrote about in the New York Times this summer. A lot of seniors said, hey, you're selling Medicare out in order to provide health care for the rest of the country. You know, you're redistributing because there's a $500 billion reduction in the rate of increase of Medicare spending that AARP agreed to. Well, that got translated into you are cutting $500 billion out of Medicare, and you're going to redistribute it to other people, and you're supposed to be protecting seniors, and what the dickens are you doing? AARP, I think, has again, a comprehensive approach to saving Medicare, and their approach is that we've got to reform the whole healthcare system. That Medicare's problems are part of the major problems of the whole healthcare system, particularly the way doctors are compensated on fee-for-service. So by going with the Affordable Care Act, which has a lot of healthcare reforms in it, they were seen by some of their constituents as selling out Medicare and redistributing healthcare to other groups.
And I imagine some of those 400,000 to a million members, and I'm stunned by that number, also felt like, look, AARP, you know, you're going too liberal on me, and I don't like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they didn't like that at all. And again, AARP is usually regarded as part of the liberal establishment. But just in the last few months, they have broken with the liberal establishment. They're getting controversial again. And again, they don't like getting too controversial and getting out front, but they have come out with some recent television ads really going after the members of the super committee who were designed to, you know, come forth with proposals to reduce the national debt. AARP's position is that we will not discuss Medicare and Social Security reform within the context of national debt reduction, because that means pitting Social Security and Medicare against other spending priorities, and we're not going to do the trade-off. They have indicated, and they got some rattles this summer by doing that, we're open to possible reforms of Medicare and Social Security considered independently, but we're not going to do it within the context of national debt reduction, because that means a zero-sum game, you know, trading off a 5% cut in Medicare for a 10% cut in Pentagon spending. So they're not going to play that game. And they had some ads, which one of which was called Numbers, which closed with, "We are 50 million people and we vote."
Wow. Well,
and
I want to ask
Tom Brokaw got very angry at them about that.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that idea of entitlement reform and where AARP has come down. But let's take some calls to Professor Lynch, if we could. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-AARP. 1-800.
They'll appreciate that. Yeah, they can
right.
sell more memberships.
1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Join us as we look at the AARP. Our guest is Professor Frederick Lynch. His new book is called One Nation Under AARP, The Fight Over Medicare, Social Security, and America's Future. And let's go to Walpole first. Sue's on the air. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. I look at AARP as like public radio. You don't need to be a member to buy what they're selling. So I think people join AARP for the lobbying effort of it. And did you find, because I know a lot of people who stopped becoming members after the health bill was passed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that people, that the numbers dropped after that of membership?
This is after the, when you say the House bill, what do you mean, Sue?
The Obama health care
okay.
bill after, the, because people felt that AARP didn't push hard enough.
Interesting.
Yes, they got criticism. This is a good question. They got criticism from the right because they said, hey, you're selling out Medicare to give it to other groups. And the left thought we should have gone for a Canadian-style single-payer system, you know, Medicare for all. So there were a lot of liberals and left-wing people upset. The reason, though, that it's kind of a joke within AARP and even among its critics, the foremost critic is Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming. And Simpson always says that AARP is 40 million people united by their love of airline discounts. And I can vouch for that. You get darn good discounts by being an AARP member. And so you do have to be a member, though, to get their auto discounts, their airline discounts, and so forth. And even within the organization, they say that's what draws the members is, you know, what we offer in terms of senior discounts on travel and hotels and things like that. And then again, also the insurance.
Well, and Sue, thanks a lot for the call. The number 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. And I want to go back, if we could, Professor Lynch, to what we were talking about before, the idea that we, meaning AARP, won't talk about entitlement reforms within the context of deficit reduction. We don't want to play that tit-for-tat game. This has given AARP somewhat of an image problem, what you and others have called the greedy geezer image,
mm-hmm.
the idea that it only cares mm-hmm. about, you know, getting as much as possible for the current senior generation and to heck with the young folk. How has AARP responded to that image? Because it's out there a lot.
Yeah, Bill Novelli was very, very sensitive to this when he came on board. So they've really, and again, this is another source of tension within AARP, and that is their, Novelli was the advocate of a big tent philosophy, that AARP was going to consider the interests of all groups of Americans and younger generations, and they had several projects designed to reach out to younger generations, particularly to encourage them to start saving early for retirement. So they've got a website called lifetuner.org, which shows younger people how to use 401ks and IRAs and so forth. And so the big tent said we're going to look at America, you know, what's best for America, because Ethel Percy Andrus, the founder of the organization, whom they still revere, had a slogan of what we do for all. So there was this sort of big tent, inclusive, we're going to talk about all generations. They're talking about preserving Social Security for future generations. But when Medicare and Social Security were suddenly put on the table, mainly by Congressman Paul Ryan's proposals this last spring, some people, including myself, said, hey, you know, who is AARP? Who are you for? Other people are going to speak up for the younger groups, but you're supposed to defend the people 50-plus and over. So they're his attention. Novelli took it so far. He also got an international emphasis going at AARP. They were flying people over to Europe and so forth to see how aging was dealt with over there. And there was some grumbling within the organization that, well, why don't we just call ourselves the Association of Persons, get rid of the retired persons. And
we're going
yes,
too broad, too far.
When I interviewed Novelli at one point, he kind of quit. He said, well, you know, call us the American Association of Persons. I just call us the Association of Persons, because, again, he was pushing his these international thing.
You seem to say that in your writings that it's too far. It's, you know, water it down, get too broad, and you lose your effectiveness.
Well, the other thing, quite frankly, is they are researching the generation that comes after the boomers, Generation X, because they are looking at them as their next wave of potential clients. So that's part of the multi-generational outreach. They're also, though, very much aware of demographic change. It is an organization which I would say is left of center, and which also is part of what might be called, again, the liberal establishment, which has a kind of an elite managerial view, I think, towards a lot of social problems. That, you know, we can fix this with programs and with management from the top, and that it's a faith in a way the power of expertise, and I think that also grates sometimes on members and non-members, is that AARP is part of this Beltway elite establishment, and that, and indeed, when you read some of their publications, it's a little bit like reading the New York Times or the Washington Post.
All right. Well, let's take some more calls, if we could, Professor Lynch. And our number, again, is 1-800-892-6477. Join our discussion. What do you make of AARP's recent lobbying activity on issues like Social Security, Medicare? What role do you think this organization should play in these debates over entitlement programs? Or should it stick to its original mission of discounts and insurance products for older Americans? Also, if you are in that age category covered by AARP, 50+, are you a member? Why or why not? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And up next, Professor Lynch, is Jim in Portsmouth. Hi, Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I think AARP does a great job of reminding those of this pre-retirement age that is coming. I think that if you look at the statistics for savings in preparation for retirement and other assets, it's pretty unrealistic. I think that a huge number of people under 65 are in denial about the stark reality of retirement and what that's going to mean for them financially. I mean, I live on exactly half what I lived on before retirement, and I have Social Security plus a pension. So,
well, and you're lucky to have that pension, right, Jim? I mean, a lot of people don't even have that anymore.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a very, very good comment. I discovered that, again, a lot of people, depending on the index you use, roughly about 30 to 40% of boomers are not at all well prepared for retirement. And, of course, boomers are the generation where, particularly if you worked in the private sector, you lost what we call defined benefit pensions, where the company would pay you for the rest of your life a fixed amount every month. Instead, we push people into 401ks and individual retirement accounts. And a lot of people haven't had the training, they don't know what they're doing, and so the caller is definitely right that AARP is very big on pushing retirement awareness. They do this at their conferences, they do this in their publications, and in that they do, I think, a really good service.
Well, and you do say that this generation is less well-prepared than earlier generations for retirement, partly because of their own attitudes, perhaps, but partly because of these changes in how society treats retirement these days.
Yeah, we've engaged in what Yale political scientist Jacob Hacker calls the great risk shift. We have put more and more of the burden of saving for retirement and also paying for your health care on the backs of individuals and families. In other words, the corporations particularly are divesting themselves of, you know, this responsibility. And the average Joe or Johnette often doesn't know that much about the financial industry, and they put all their retirement savings in one stock, you know, the company stock. And then when companies like Enron, for example, in Houston go bust, they wind up with nothing.
Here's an email from Steve who says, AARP is a disgrace, as if the elders and boomers of this country were not self-centered enough. Now they have a very effective PAC and marketing organization through which to realize their unbounded greed. He says, the fact is that AARP acts like it wants to force young people into never-ending servitude toward their golden years. AARP acts like a commercial corporation should lose its tax-exempt status. He says in the future, old people are going to have to suffer like the rest of Americans. What do you think about this? You know, you talk about this in the book. There's sort of a generational warfare brewing in an age of scarce resources.
And AARP, and again, the rest of the Washington establishment, is very afraid of this. They don't want this to happen, which is why they have all these outreach programs and why within the organization there is this emphasis on saving Social Security and Medicare for future generations. I mean, a lot of their members have children and grandchildren. And, yeah, the emailer is you know, conjuring up the greedy geezer image that AARP has tried so hard to avoid. Nevertheless, I think, you know, we have lost in Congress Senator Ted Kennedy. Claude Pepper, the senator from Florida, used to be the voice of senior citizens in the Congress. And really, one of the questions I asked almost all the people I interviewed over 10 years of research, largely in D.C., including Congress people, people in the White House and so forth, I said, who speaks for the next generation of seniors? Who speaks for the boomers? And usually I got a blank stare. You know, there was basically nobody. There's nobody to be our Claude Pepper. And so AARP, whether boomers like it or not, whether they think AARP is too liberal or not, by default, unless boomers get it together on our own, AARP is going to be our spokesperson.
Well, aren't boomers so big in terms of size that they don't need a spokesmodel like AARP? I mean, they're everywhere.
Well, the other thing, though, that I look at in the book is that boomers are very, very diverse and very factionated and very divided. Looking in terms of can boomers become, again, the senior voting bloc, which has been long feared. Again, you hear a lot about the senior vote, about gray power. It hasn't come to pass yet. Seniors do vote in greater proportion than other age groups, but they have not yet become a unified voting bloc. The reason for that, though, is because Medicare and Social Security have never been seriously threatened. And as we know from George Orwell, nothing unites a group like an external threat, you know, an enemy. So those forces, I think, you know, could act to make boomers the sleeping giant of age power. On the other hand, boomers are deeply divided by class, by politics, by culture. They're what I call the MSNBC boomers versus the Fox News boomers. And there's no feud like a family feud. And they fight and they scrap, and Rush Limbaugh on radio will say, spoiled brat baby boomers, they've been spoiled all their lives, they squandered this and that. And some left-wing commentators will say, yeah, they're a bunch of greedy yuppies and all they care about is themselves. And so I think whether we
And Professor
will
Lynch,
have
I'm
age
so sorry,
power
I gotta cut
is
you
the
off.
Question.
I gotta cut you right off there for a short break, but we will be right back. Stay with us.
Snow's a wonderful thing, especially when you're watching it come down from inside. Keep warm with the Kindle Fire this winter, Amazon's full-color tablet computer. During NHPR's upcoming Winter Fun Drive, we're giving away a Fire and a $200 Amazon gift card so you can stock it up with books, music, and movies. When you make a gift to NHPR today, you're automatically entered to win. Visit nhpr.org or enter by calling 1-888-805-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, whose loans and education help borrowers create opportunity and transform lives. CommunityLoanFund.org. And from PSNH, proud supporter of a University of New Hampshire study on New Hampshire habitats and wildlife. More details can be found at www.extension.unh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, more activity on charter schools here in the Granite State. Email us your questions, comments, personal experiences with charter schools to exchange at nhpr.org. And then join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in the Exchange, the author of a new book called One Nation Under AARP is with us, Professor Frederick Lynch. We want to hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Your questions and comments about AARP's dual mission of providing consumer services as well as political activity. Also, just your thoughts as to whether you're a member or not and why. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And Professor Lynch, let's go right back to our callers. Mary's calling in from Laconia. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you. I have a question and a comment. I'm wondering if they keep track of the age when people join.
Oh, yes, because they do, Mary.
Okay, well, I don't know if they maybe understand, if, for example, my thinking that knowing that I was eligible from age 50 and getting constant mailings and whatever, I chose not to join until my early 60s because in those first years, I felt that they were way too Republican agenda for me, that it was not in any way working in my best interest, and I didn't want to be part of that.
Interesting.
And so I just thought that was maybe an interesting thing for them to understand, separate from who all left when they were working so hard on trying to reform the health care. But the other thing is that the comments recently made about the founder saying doing what we do for all, to me, my understanding of that is that it's directed toward those 50 and up, but trying to do what's right for everybody, not leaning too far one way or another, but try best efforts to do what's right for the common good, but for that age range.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
So I could take my comments off the air. I don't and free up the phone if you wish.
Well, Mary, so now you've joined in your 60s. So what do you think? Are you glad you've joined, or are you still a little squeamish?
No, I have been happy with what they're doing. I have had some legislative experience here myself and understand the difficulties of legislation and accomplishing things and having to take one step at a time. And the fact that they understood the tremendous need for reforming health care. I was one who would like to have seen it be single payer. It works for the military. It works for so much of the U.S. that it would take the pressures of the moneyed corporations out of it. We can still, have our private doctors, and maybe somehow there's room for the private insurance companies, but to have an option for people who want to be in a single payer seems to me the
Mary,
no-brainer. And I feel that they're looking at what's going to make the foundation better.
All right. Mary, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Professor Lynch?
This is a great question, great pair of questions. First of all, they do keep track of people by age. AARP, the magazine, is actually very quietly segmented for people 50 to 60, and then another magazine for people 60 to 70. And then a third version of the magazine, I should say, for people 70 and above. They really do have two independent constituencies within AARP. There's the 50 to 64-year-old people who really aren't eligible for Medicare and Social Security. And then there's the 65-plus people who are already on those programs and to some extent have different needs and wants. And really one of the reasons they went for health care reform, which the caller was mentioning, and back the Affordable Care Act, is there a lot of goodies in the Affordable Care Act for people 50 to 64 in terms of how much insurance companies can charge them for being older Americans but yet not ready for Medicare. And the leaders of AARP were kind of disappointed that 50 to 64-year-olds weren't more in favor of that bill. Go ahead.
She asked about, do they keep track of when I join? And mm-hmm. you said yes. And, there are a lot of jokes about once you turn 49, you start getting letters from the AARP.
They find you.
Yeah, they sure do. When did they make that decision to go to 50 plus, given that they started out as an organization of retired persons?
I think 50 plus was done about 10 or 15 years ago.
Also pretty recent then.
Yeah. Again, it's always sort of been I think when it first started out, it was a little higher. They've actually talked about dropping it to 45. And again, then we would be half the country members of AARP. But I think 50-plus, again, people start to get the telltale medical signs that people start thinking a little bit, I think, about retirement, maybe not as much as they should. But, again, biological things start to happen. I teach a course on health care. And so you get those little tests back saying your cholesterol is going up, or you better watch your Cokes, candy, and cookies, i.e. diabetes. And so I think that's the reason.
All right.
And also, of course, people who are in their 50s, you're very vulnerable to age discrimination and to losing your health insurance if you get fired. You know, we're the only country in the world where your health insurance is attached to your job. And if you try to go out on the market on your own or for your family and you're above 50 and you have a pre-existing medical condition, that's going to be very, very expensive insurance if you can get it at all.
Well, Mary, thanks a lot for that call. And our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And up next is Frank in Bedford. Hi, Frank. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead and thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Laura, love your show. You do a great job.
Good.
I was ready to join AARP a couple of years ago, but they started running an ad with United Healthcare out of Chicago, and somehow they're helping, they're putting their imprimatur on United Healthcare's products, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but United Healthcare is the largest private health insurance company for profit in the country, and in October of 06, and you can research this in the New York Times, their chairman, William McGuire, left. And as he left, they gave him a walking-out-the-door package, and this is stunning, but it's true, $1,821,000,000 payment, stock options, future benefits, cash, and so forth. And any insurance company that is paying one man almost $2 billion has to collect that expense from somebody, and it is private health insurance premiums.
So why is AARP hooking up with this, Frank?
Yeah, they take 34 cents out of every dollar to run themselves. Medicare takes 3 cents. So these in private health insurance companies, to me, are bordering on criminal organizations when they pay a man $2 billion a year.
Frank, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Professor Lynch? Have you heard others say what our caller is saying in your research?
Yeah, I think, again, this is part of the problem. AARP sort of goes down the middle of the road to some extent, pleasing neither the left nor the right. The person who was their policy director, he just recently retired, John Rother, basically, said, we practice the politics of the possible. The insurance industry in this country is huge. If you want to get anything done, you generally have to play ball with them, which is one reason they didn't go for the single-payer Canadian-style health care reform that a lot of people wanted. Yes, they do partner with United Healthcare, and a lot of their products are very good and have been judged so by outside, evaluators. But given that the country, and again, given the power of the insurance lobby, in terms of getting things done, I hear what the caller is saying. There are abuses in the corporate system, certainly with regard to healthcare. But still, in terms of the products that AARP offers, and again, they simply brand these policies. They basically work with United Healthcare to get seniors broad-based coverage for a pretty good price. I think they're the biggest provider of Medicare Part D and also Medigap insurance. And, they work in the system as it is. I think there are many people at AARP that would favor the Canadian healthcare system. But, and I watched John Rother deal with this at I don't know how many political meetings and conference meetings. That was always the first question that came up is, how come you guys play ball with the insurance companies? And he said, we do what we can to reform the system. And, if they had tried to push Canadian health care, the Canadian health care formula, though it would have delighted many people, maybe including me, it simply would not have flown. And they knew that.
Well, Frank, thanks for the question, and clearly it's one that does come up. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to return, Professor Lynch, if we could, to a big subject in your book, which we've touched on, but I want to get into a little bit more, and that's AARP's attempts to reach out to 78 million baby boomers and convince them that, as you put it, it's not your father's AARP. You touched on how AARP is trying to do that, but boy, there are a lot of efforts underway to grab onto those baby boomers.
Oh, sure, yeah. Again, they've gotten very web-wise. They've very gotten high-tech. Again, they have these annual mega conferences to draw the boomers in. Again, I think they're being pushed into being the People's Tribune, if you will, to defend Medicare and Social Security. And I think that's going to align them with the aging baby boomers, again, particularly that older cohort, because we're beginning to become aware, again, of our limitations, the fact that people can lose jobs, the fact that suddenly you may be retired whether you want to be or not. Also, another way that boomers are getting very familiar, and I think for buying into Social Security and Medicare and the need for it, is boomers are still taking care of their parents. At least some of them are. And when you're taking care of older parents and you realize the benefits of Social Security and Medicare there, it's kind of a double buy-in. You suddenly realize that they're dependent on Medicare and Social Security, and I'm going to be very soon. And suddenly you become very much aware of anybody who's starting to talk about cuts in those programs.
Will baby boomers as a group, what do you think, Professor Lynch, be more or less likely to join AARP than previous generations were?
Well, the choice I put in the book is boomers have three choices. I call it me, we, or AARP. we can pursue the politics. We're a very individualized generation. We can sort of go our own fragmented way and break this way and that on various social issues. Or we can form our own, you know, political organization, something like MoveOn.org or something like that for boomers, you know, Boomers.org or something like that. Or if we can't get it together, again, by default, AARP, since they have the organization and the know-how, will be, as the Nancy Sinatra song used to say, the leaders of the pack.
How will AARP, though, do that and not come across as unwilling to play ball in an era of very tight budgets, in an era where we see these demographic waves, aging baby boomers again, taking more from programs like Social Security, Medicare? How does AARP avoid, you know, saying, no, don't touch it, defend it at all costs when there are so many needs?
Well, I think their present position is very good on this. They're saying we will talk about limited reforms to Medicare and Social Security, but we won't do it as part of this grand bargain, this big trade-off deal within the context of the national debt. I think that's a pretty pragmatic, pretty reasonable, pretty centrist position. Is yes, we will talk reforms. And even when that came out this last summer, there was some you know, waves that went across the country. But, you know, we are going to do so only with independently considering these programs. We won't pit Medicare spending against, you know, armed forces spending or other forms of the national debt.
Why should those programs be considered separately? Could you make that same argument for defense programs? Okay, let's talk about reforming defense and the way we spend money there, but only in a separate context, or environmental programs, or child welfare programs. I mean, could you make that argument, Professor Lynch, about any cherished government program?
I think to some extent Medicare and Social Security are special. They're the most successful social policy programs we've had in the nation. I mean, the poverty rate for older people before these programs were there were, you know, 30 and 40%. We've cut it now to about 9%. It's something almost everybody is touched by, either through their parents or their grandparents or whatever. And, again, I think if there's anything to the core of American society, what we are as a nation state, what we owe one another, I talk about this at the end of the book, that the questions about what we're going to do about Medicare and Social Security are not just about the role of government. It's about the role of the nation state, who we are and what we owe one another. So I think you can make an argument that those programs are somewhat special insofar as they're going to touch almost every American. And I think, you know, considering them independently apart from other programs is a reasonable goal.
Do you think AARP will be able to maintain that position, again, given the tremendous pressures to reduce debt and deficits?
I think they've done it so far, and I think I wouldn't be surprised to actually have AARP come out with their own blueprints for reforming Social Security and Medicare. They haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say,
but
wow.
That may be on the menu.
Do you think they would do that? That would be a big shift, wouldn't it?
I think it would, but I think, again, they were thinking about that this summer. John Rother said that the reforms are coming and I want to be at the helm, you know, when this happens. So they realize that they're going to have to be reforms. And I think, you know, making a peremptory strike in the language of their warrior brand, as they call it, their fighting political brand, might be a good idea.
Well, what's been the overall reaction to this book, Professor Lynch? First of all, from AARP itself, I'm sure everybody in that big building in D.C. has read it.
I think they thought it was fair and balanced, and the initial response was good. I wrote a more critical article based on the book in the New York Times this summer, saying, you know, look, whose AARP is it?
Right, mission
and
creep.
And you've got to make a decision. Are you going to be the senior citizens lobby, or are you going to be this kumbaya, you know, all generations, multi-generation, multicultural organization that doesn't have any focus?
And what was the reaction among the AARP folks from that article? Because I read it.
It was
critical.
More critical. I think, the head of AARP, the president of the board, wrote a letter to the New York Times saying, yes, we are for seniors. And I noticed, you know, the advertisements they've been running lately are much more senior-centered focused. Again, we're 50 million people and we vote. And I had my backstage conversation with people at AARP, and I said, well, gee, it's nice to see them, you know, responding to my New York Times op-ed. I was told, don't overestimate your influence. But I think, that, again, my own response and a lot of other people's response, I think a lot of their members' response, have pushed them in the direction of saying, yeah, we are the senior lobby. But we want to be reasonable. And, again, they're looking at the next group coming up. They want to be the spokesman not only for boomers, but for the Xers and, again, for all Americans, which is where I got the title of the book, of course, is One Nation Under AARP.
All right.
They want to be the arbiter of all this.
Professor Lynch, it's been great to talk to you. Again, thanks so much for giving us your time this morning.
Okay. I hope people will visit Amazon and take a look at the book.
The book, again, is called One Nation Under AARP, The Fight Over Medicare, Social Security, and America's Future. The author is Frederick Lynch, a government professor at Claremont McKenna College in California. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer today is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.